Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about something that's changing the game for women in dental leadership. It's called the Empowered Leadership Experience for Women in Dental. It's a six-month transformational journey for women who are done with burnout, over-functioning, and trying to lead like someone they're not. This isn't just another leadership training. It's a coming home to your voice, your power, and your joy. If you've ever felt alone at the top or stuck somewhere in the middle, this one's for you. Enrollment is now open. Head to leadhership-experience.com to enroll. Because real leadership isn't about performing. It's about remembering who you are. Now, let's get into today's episode. Edna Abreu is an extraordinary woman, and I'm happy to call her a friend. She's a first-gen American who started out in dental and worked her way up through the trenches and is now a coach and consultant specializing in inclusivity and culture and leadership. She also handholds offices through the nitty-gritty so that they can make systems work in their offices. She does not come in and lay down a bunch of systems and operations and then flies out and lets them struggle through it. Because of how she was raised and because of her story and because of her experience in dental, she's so committed to providing for her teams and being that person that they can rely on and depend on. In this conversation, we talk about including others in your dental offices that you typically are judgmental against, whether it's the big earrings that they wear, the tattoos, or even the color of their skin, how our judgment can get in the way of experiencing extraordinary team members and people that can bring so much to your business. We also share a lot about her story and what has made her the person she is today. And we also talk about some of the issues that most doctor owners struggle with when they focus on culture and how they often think it's not really their problem to focus on it. I'm really looking forward to listening to this conversation and getting to know Edna a little bit better. And if you don't love her by the end of this conversation, listen again and make sure you follow her on all the social handles because Edna is somebody that you want to know and she's making waves in the dental industry. Enjoy. Edna, welcome. I am so glad that you are here.
Hey, girl. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So let's dive right into it because you're one of my favorite people to talk to and you're so real and you're so honest and you have very pointed thoughts and opinions. And I want to make sure that we get them all in during our time together. So one of the things that you are such an advocate for is embracing, you know, all types of people in the dental office because you've experienced this yourself. You started out as a team member and now you are turned coach and consultant and you've helped countless teams and offices experience success. And I think your perspective and viewpoint is so valuable because you've been in the trenches with the teams. You are a person that's on the fringe, I guess, in how people judge typical dental office employees. So you've also experienced that. And I don't know, from over here, you're somebody that I know has hustled, has clawed, and, you know, fought your way to where you are today. And I just have so much respect and admiration for you. And you have such a kind, loving, generous heart to go along with that too, which is also really amazing. And now you're helping other people do the same. So it's just a really incredible story to me. And so from your perspective, share with me a little bit about like what we're talking about, the judgment that a lot of doctors and office managers or even DSO executives hold towards non-conventional team members and what the impact of that is.
Yeah. Well, first, thank you so much for those awesome words. Yeah. You're great. You know, I'm a big fan. So thanks. I'm always like, Brandy's super dope. She's awesome. But no, I mean, I feel like there is this non-spoken rule that people have. And so it can come like when you're at conferences, it could come from hiring a coach, it could come from hiring a team member. But there's this weird underlying thing that people will say, and they'll say, she looks or he looks or they look like they're not experienced enough. And so I've always asked myself, well, what is that look? How do you look experienced? Is it because of the way that we're dressed? Or is it because it's not the right fit as far as like skin tone in your practice? Is it because we're not fueling or feeding like the all woman practice or the all men practice? Is it because our beliefs and the way that we dress is different? So I've always challenged that, especially like being part of a team or even in coaching other practices. You know, I always wonder, and that's the biggest question I have, well, what does experience look like? You know, until that person opens their mouth and shows you what they can do, it doesn't look like anything. It looks like a regular person. And I think that's somewhere where in the industry we suffer a lot, because mm-hmm. as we had said, like, and spoken earlier about a lot of things going on, that there's a lot of hidden talent that people don't tap into, that they could potentially do that if they were just to throw that stigma away. And it brings me back to a lot of the things that we're talking about in the dental industry right now. A lot of people are like, oh, we're short-staffed, or I can't find the right fit. And I want to say, well, is it that we are short-staffed, or is it that you're the problem and you're just being judgmental and that you want this certain look for your practice that you're trying to attain? Well, if that's the case, we don't have a particular look to what expertise is. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that I advocate for, because I've met amazing young first gen immigrants and women that have been teen moms and all the things, and they may not have fit that look, but man, they were amazing and made so much impact in these practices. Team members that have a slight accent but showed up to work every single day on time and did the extra work and worked through lunch and did all the things. So yeah, I always challenge people to think outside of the box.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you experience some of that yourself too when you started out in dental?
I would say I actually had the amazing privilege to work for a long time for somebody that was really away from that kind of situation and didn't believe in those kind of things. It actually happened when I stepped into the bigger dental industry and kind of started trying to fly solo on my own, where people would say, you know, I wouldn't wear that if I were you. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I wouldn't wear your hair that way. Like, it's really curly. It's taking away from your face. Or, you know, the hoop earrings are maybe too long, too big. Maybe like stick to studs. This is the advice that I was getting. Or don't tell that story. Don't tell people that you were a first, like an immigrant when you first came here. Don't say that, because that could turn some offices and some people away or some doctors away. Don't say that you were a teen mom, because that could say a lot about yourself. And so when that came to pass, I really thought about it. I was like, wow, you know, it's crazy that our own people, like our own community, doesn't keep us safe in those areas and actually tells us to say the opposite things. But that wouldn't be a story, right? I wouldn't have, if you were to say, hey, where were you born? I'm like, well, Bolivia, I wasn't born here. And then, you know, I wouldn't attract the same kind of clients that I have now, or even friends and community that I have now, if I really, like, really applied that advice that I was given. So it was sad to see. It was really sad to hear, mostly.
Yeah, that's really tough to experience. Yeah. Now, what would you say to the doctor, you know, or owner that is judgmental, you know, and they want to have a specific brand or look? I mean, I've seen plenty of those offices, right, where you walk in and there's a clear aesthetic. Yeah. Some doctors might argue, that's what I want. That's the brand that I want to have. What's it to you? Leave me alone. This is why I have my own business. So for somebody like that, because the first thought that comes to mind too is, okay, fine, if that's the aesthetic that you want and the look that you want. And then also, I'm assuming it's also pushing away a lot of patients as well that wouldn't feel comfortable in that office. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. And as to what I would say is, honestly, I would really say sucks for you, because the what you're missing out on, there's a big difference between keeping your practice aesthetically pleasing as far as like how the look and the vibe and like the smell and the colors and the branding. There's a difference between that. And there's a difference between you wanting to keep the people the same. And we are in a generation and an era where that's absolutely almost impossible to have. Yeah. And so, I mean, to me, it would just be like they're disservicing themselves. They're just not only themselves, but we talk about how patient experience is how comfortable our patients feel with us and how much they trust us. And so patients are aware when things are happening, when they see something and they're like, wait, all of them look the same. They all sound the same. Why are they wearing the same thing and have their hair on the same way? You know, there's a kind of message, a silent message that we're sending to people when we do those things and think that way.
Yeah. And to me, I mean, it seems like you specialize in some of the understanding of Gen Z and, you know, the younger generation. And I know as a fellow coach, you know, I hear time and time again, there's a struggle going on between, you know, the boomers and they're kind of, you know, they're on their way out, you know, of the offices typically. And then, you know, I'm a Gen Xer. So I think there's even a shift in Gen X and Zs, and millennials are somewhere caught in between. Right? So there's a clear generational thing that's going on. And I wrote about it a little bit because I also know it's just how different generations were raised, right? And I think both generations can learn from each other, for sure. I mean, as far as being a Gen Xer, it was, you know, I joke that we survived the 80s, and I'm sure generations before me would say the same thing about, you know, the decades they were raised. But it's kind of pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, we were the latchkey kids, you know, where moms were finally working and parents were nowhere to be found. And, you know, riding our bikes around after dark, hoping, you know, not to get hit by a car and stuff like that. But Z is definitely a different era. You know, they're growing up with so much more at their fingertips and access to so much more world news, that's for sure. So what would be, you know, what's some suggestions or advice even for people that struggle with Gen Z? Because I literally get it weekly on my coaching calls with office managers, particularly. You know, the common thing is like, this generation, kids these days, you know, it's just this exhaustion. And I get it, you know. So what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the style of management and the style that we speak to them, to Gen Zs or the new generations that are coming up. When we have to remember, like back when we were in offices, really like in the grind, like back when I was a dental assistant, which was decades ago, we did all the work that we had to do because the people that were our bosses were doctors, right? And so we were taught that doctors, DDS, anybody, lawyer, anything with a degree, they just get respect just because they have it, like just because of that degree, not because they're giving it to me or they're talking to me like I'm human, but just because that's the way it is. Nowadays, honestly, I feel like the feeling is still the same, but some doctors still think that way. Like they think that, oh, they have to say what I do exactly how I want it done and respect me and not give their opinion because I'm the doctor, I'm the owner, I'm this. I would challenge to say yes and no, because to me, it's kind of like, well, do you give them respect? Mm-hmm. Do you value their time like they value yours? Do you say, hey, I'm going to go on a holiday break for a week and you guys figure it out. I'm closing the office down just because it's my office and my practice and we forget about the pockets of others. But just because you're the doctor and the owner and you feel like, hey, they just have to listen to me. All of those things curate a lack of distrust and disrespect. So when the team members nowadays, when they're like, well, Joe Schmo is open across the street and my friend works there and he gives them paid time off or he'll do something else to close the office down, I want to go over there. It looks like he respects his team. Mm-hmm. You know, now there's a different kind of generation where they're asking all the questions to their own community and saying, do you work in dental? I work in dental. This is happening. How's your boss treating you? And so there's that part where it's not like that anymore, right? It's not where just because you're a doctor, you make the shots and the call, the team is just has no options. There's a lot of options. And then the other part that I feel that a lot of docs and even office managers make mistakes is they talk to the younger generation or Gen Zs as if they don't understand. Mm-hmm. Like they talk to them in a way where it's kind of like their child, you know? And so they're like, don't talk to me like that. Tell me how it is. Like there's been so many times where I've tried it that way and I try to like pull up my report and just really say, okay, well, you did this and you came in at this time and I'm writing you up and I'm going to send you a follow-up email. And they just used to look at me like, are you not a person? Am I not a, like, are you a robot and I'm a robot? Like, why aren't we having regular conversations? Until I changed my style of managing and saying, hey, look, like you have a life and I get it. And this is a business place and this is the way the business works. And you kind of tell it to them how they could see it within their own lives. Instead of going to the book and like the policy handbook on how we write people up, we start talking to them like they're humans. It seems like that helps build the trust. And then when you have conversations with Gen Zs or the younger hires, as you would say, they start listening. Like, and they have to feel like they can relate to you. If they feel like they can't relate to you and that you're not approachable and that you can't talk to them, they won't open up and they won't really tell you what's brewing inside of them. And then also the trust and respect factor, right? We expect them to show up on time and be on time and make sure that they, I don't know, stock the rooms at a certain time and all the things. But sometimes what we do with our team members, especially again, the new gens, because they're younger, maybe, I'm not really sure. We'll say, hey, I forgot to respond. I forgot to do that. We'll do it tomorrow. Or, hey, it's my fault. I forgot to tell you that we're closing tomorrow. I apologize. And we kind of just like put them on the back burner and that's not fair. Right. So I think my sheer advice would just really be like, treat them like people, but not only treat them the people, but treat them like people that really have some human skills, because they do. I mean, I coach teams that have team like staff that's younger than 30 and they can rip and run like any mm-hmm. type of fee-for-service practice that has all the high end, what you would call like the ideal team members. And they will work hard and they will be, they'll have a lot of integrity and they'll like shout your name and post you on social media just because you respected them and you gave them that trust and that space where they're like, hey, I can work here without being judged, without being kind of treated like I'm disposable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. Yeah. Cause I think we, you know, people can tend to write people off pretty quickly. And it just goes back to what you're saying, like the judgment, and we automatically make up a story about somebody, we categorize them in our head, and then we treat them according to that preconceived notion or story we have in our head, right? Yeah. And the classic, like what you said, judging a book by its cover. Like, oh, I know this person, I know this type, and this is how I'm going to treat them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then they become, exactly. And then they become that, right? I think that's something to think about too. It's, they feel the energy of it and then they become that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's been plenty of times where we hear, or I've had interviews with doctors and they're like, well, I don't want young moms because they have daycare problems, or, you know, they have childcare issues. Yes and no, they're still moms, but we also have older team members that are married and have all the support that also have childcare problems, you know? Yeah. So it's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What has been the biggest surprise for you going from being a team member and in the trenches to making the shift to being a coach and consultant that you didn't expect?
I think, again, it's definitely going to be not looking or presenting myself like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I think that has been the biggest challenge. It hasn't been said verbatim, like nobody has said, hey, Edna, because you look like you're 20 and that you just stepped into the dental field, that you don't have experience. Yeah. Like nobody has said that. But even in many interviews with doctors, you know, their questions will be like, well, how long have you done this? Or they'll challenge me with things that they think that I don't know or could solve. And then later on, they're obviously surprised and they love me. But I think that that's still pretty interesting to me. Like, even though we write these like intricate bios, like, hey, I've been in the dentistry for 20 years, I've integrated these things, they're still kind of like, really?
Yeah.
Because you don't look like,
yeah.
It's interesting. It's really interesting. But that has been the biggest surprise. And then also, like, I'm also super surprised about having, there's a lot of support from women like you and other people in the industry who actually have been like, hey, you know what? You may not be what everybody's used to, but we accept you. We love you. And come on over here. Like, we're going to take you under our wing and we're going to do the thing. And thankfully, I also have clients and doctors that who also, you know, one of the things that they did say is, I may not understand what, you know, how you operate, but my team, they can relate to you. Mm-hmm. They like you. They can relate to you, your energy, your vibe, the way you speak. You know, you don't use these crazy words. Like, they get it and they get you. And that's what I need. And so, yeah, thank you. And it's been interesting seeing both sides of the coin, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see, yeah, you can see the upside and downside, I guess, of it all too. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's also something to be said where I've recognized this and I see this across the board too, where women in general need to prove ourselves time and time again, where it's the questioning experience, right? And making sure that you're fit to do the job, where I don't think that's always as common. If, you know, maybe a man came in that looked a little bit younger, sometimes I think people get excited about that possibility with coaches or something like that. But that's something I think too, just even in a broader stroke. Something you specialize in is culture, right? And reigniting culture in offices and creating that in spaces. What do you think doctors get wrong when they're trying to create culture? What do you think always gets in the way? Like, you come in and you just see it all the time. You're like, man, I wish doctors would stop doing this.
Yeah, that culture is the last thing that they should be worried about. Mm. That's a them thing and not a you thing. Like, that's always what that's on them. They feel like that. Well, I want to see the work that they're doing. I'm not burning them out. This isn't. It must be their home life that's burning them out. They must have something personal going on and they bring it over here. And so I hear that so many times over and over again that I'm just like, you know, it's not really it. And even I always say, like, when you work in an environment where culture is kind of what is perceived and like on the top of the totem pole, not the bottom, even if that team member is having issues at home or it's on them, your work environment could really make a huge shift in your personal life. So to the docs that are always like, oh, that culture isn't on me, it's on them. I shouldn't be worried about that. I don't want to be involved in those conversations. Edna, like, this is emotional conversations. I want to have business conversations is usually what I hear. Mm. And like I said, it's twofold. It's definitely not like that. If we were to keep culture first and really ask our team members, hey, like, I noticed, Brandy, that you came in and you didn't say hi and you didn't look the same way that you did yesterday. Like, what do you need from me? Like, how can I help you? What support do you need from me to get the same Brandy that I saw yesterday today? People just won't take that small amount of time because I think that's like, oh, that's a them thing. But the them thing, they're going to be in your office for the next 8 hours and that energy is just going to spread like wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. And yeah, I like too how you said it's one of the last things they think about, right? It's instead of leading with culture, it's like, okay, I have this business built. Things don't feel how I want them to feel. Maybe I should think about culture instead of leading with it, which is how do I want the experience to be for not just me, but for my patients and for my team, and then building and designing your business around that culture.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the most important things that when doctors or startups or whatever want to start building their plan, I think one is definitely the vision. And then what do you want the practice to feel like for you? And what do you want the practice to feel like for the team? Not how much is your bottom line, how much do you want to make tomorrow, how many new patients do you want, but what is it that you want? And then how are you going to create that? And not only how you're going to create that, but how are you going to uphold that from the day you open till the day you close?
Yeah. Do you think the doctor is the primary person responsible for culture, or do you think office managers or anything like that plays a vital role, or does it always fall on the doctor?
Yeah, I think it starts from the very top. Yeah. Honestly,
yeah.
It's from the doctor. If there's no way that you could say, hey, Edna, I want an amazing culture and I'm not going to check on my team member, you know, after something crazy has happened in your life, that's in their life, that's your responsibility. There's actually no win-win. Yeah. If it starts with the doctor, it's going to trickle down. It's literally just like a domino effect. It really is. Like, if the doctor doesn't have it, it just all starts having a pyramid all the way down. I mean, there's places where I've been brought into where the doctor is very stern, very not open-minded or doesn't have like, doesn't want to think outside of the box, and then told to like, hey, I want you to coach my office manager on how to create culture in the practice because we don't have it. And I really just turn around and I'm like, you know, I think we have to start with you first. Mm-hmm. Got to start with you, because in order for it to work. So I think it's definitely the doctor. It falls on them for sure. And then also like looking at when things fall apart, I think one thing that we don't say, when things start falling apart in your practice or your team is breaking out or there's massive turnover, you know, docs, business owners and docs themselves don't turn around and say, okay, let's pause a little bit. Let's take a look at myself. Where are my gaps? Like, what have I been doing or not doing in the last X amount of time when this started falling apart? I'm pretty sure that if somebody just like reevaluates themselves and just pauses, they're going to see that there are some things that they haven't done in the X amount of time that the team has had massive turnover that they did in the beginning when they had a stable team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I want to take a little bit of a pivot here too, because you're pretty open mm-hmm. about like your personal story and your life a bit. What would you say to someone out there who maybe is coming from similar circumstances as you have, or is really just struggling and finding their footing or identity, or feeling like the way they look or their personal situation is getting in the way of them achieving what they want to achieve within the dental space? What kind of advice or suggestions would you have for them?
I think definitely don't play small. Mm. Like, don't allow those things to be any type of like barriers between who you are and what you want to become. Also, like, don't allow the industry or anybody who you think is like on the very top to make you feel small. You know, I think authentically showing up the person that you are every day, all day, makes people like you, because it's natural. You're not like faking the funk, you know, you're just yeah. who you are. And like, tell your story. I think one of the biggest things is people shy away from being honest because they feel like there's something that people want to hear. And so that their story isn't one of them. And that's a complete lie. Like I had shared before, me being a teen mom has played a huge role into the woman and the person that I am mm-hmm. today. Me being a first gen Latina and being an immigrant for a couple years in my life has allowed me to see people from different lenses and say, hey, you know, like, everybody has value and everybody has quality if they're given the chance to do so. And so, yeah, I think my advice would simply just be like, don't play small, be who you are. Your story matters. There's a place for you in this industry. There's a place for you in this world, whatever it is, teen mom, Latina, it doesn't matter. Like, people will love you just because of who you are and genuinely who you are.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I love the idea of not playing small. And even, you know, what's coming to mind for me too is if they're forcing you to be somebody you're not, find another place to go, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not you, it's them. And keep yeah. looking until you find that place where you can... Yeah. be yourself and you're not being pigeonholed to a specific identity.
Exactly. And I think even in consulting or being a business owner, I mean, do you really want the clients that don't want you for who you are? Yeah. Like, is it always going to be about the money? Are you going to sell yourself short for a couple $100? Are you going to fake the funk for a couple $100? Or are you going to just be miserable just to keep another person really happy? Like, really, that is it really worth it? And to me, my answer is always like, absolutely not. Like, I'm going to play big and I'm going to be who I am. And the people that are like, hey, you know, teen moms, because you're a teen mom, it shows that you are irresponsible. You know, lead with that, because I know where I am now and I know that where I was before. And if it was irresponsibility, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's funny because my mind doesn't go there when I think of teen mom. I think of someone who's fighting for their family and, you know, is probably going to work their butt off and, you know, they're showing up and they want to work and they're trying to create a life for themselves. And so like, that's my thought, right? But like you're saying, there's a lot of people who think what you shared. So there's people out there that will see you for more than just something, some negative judgment that they have in their head, for sure.
Exactly.
I know for you, you've been somebody that's just, I think one of the things I admire about you too is just your level of perseverance. Like, you just keep going, you know, you don't quit. you really believe in yourself and you dust yourself off and you just keep going. Where does that come from for you? Where do you think that that grit comes from inside of you to just keep going?
I think it really came from my parents. Like, you know, it was hard for them to be here and they went through a lot of obstacles and there's a lot of challenges. There were a lot of challenges in the world that they had to face over and over and over again. And they never stopped. I mean, they never stopped to get to exactly where they wanted to be in life and do exactly what they want to do and give their daughters the life that they always wanted to, no matter how hard it took. And, you know, one of the things that my mom always tells me, she's like, if I can do it, you can do way more. Mm. And that's it. I mean, that stuck with me forever. And so I think that's really where it comes from. It's kind of from seeing a woman who has had multiple challenges in life and even coming to the States and creating, and both of them creating this like awesome home to live in. You know, I'm the oldest of four sisters. All my sisters are amazing, like professionals, like very polished, awesome females. My parents own like this huge commercial cleaning company. They travel the world. I mean, it's been awesome to see. So that's really honestly where it comes from. And then obviously just seeing my kids, like, you know, just seeing my kids fighting through these weird, like this weird world. I'm like, hey, they can go to school every day and like be around a bunch of people that are a little bit, you know, like not understanding what's going on. And they do it every day. And I love that. So yeah, it definitely comes from that.
Yeah. Well, Edna, thank you so much. It's always such an honor to talk with you and connect with you. And I just always love so much of what you have to share. Is there anything that you want to share, anything that we didn't get to today that you want to share with anyone out there that needs to hear your message?
There are a lot of things in the industry that we need to talk about. They need to be said. And we can't just hide in the bushes and not talk about the elephant in the room all the time. You know, whether it's, hey, my team doesn't understand me, they don't have common sense, to they don't look how I want them to look, they need to wear this, they need to have this kind of image, to the fact of simply saying, hey, they don't look like they have experience, you know. And so I think just the last thing that I want to leave people with is like, one, you don't know what experience looks like until that person can show you and prove themselves. And sometimes when you take a chance on that person, they can change your entire practice around. You just have to give them that chance.
I love that. Yeah. And I've seen it. I've witnessed it too in offices. Like the unexpected person is always comes around and is this total rock star. And then the people you do think are going to be the rock star, more often than not, you're like, well, they weren't who we thought they were going to be.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
You're like, I should have let them go a while ago.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much. You're amazing. I can't wait for people to listen to this. And if they don't know you already, to be able to find you through our conversation. And you're just the best. You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices, it's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess, that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.